coming up, I've got 17 questions about the upcoming NBA season for Bobby Marks from ESPN. And then Tyrese Haliburton joins the show to talk about some trends in the NBA, what we've seen, what's coming in the years to come. Really good conversation with Tyrese about the league as a whole. And then Dan Titus from Yahoo Sports joins at the end to talk about this upcoming fantasy basketball season, sleepers, risers, his guys. Good conversation with Dan to close the podcast. That's all coming up right now. All right, joining me today, Bobby Marks from ESPN. Bobby, how you doing?
I am doing great. Last week of the preseason. How about that? We get rolling next week.
It's just right around the corner on Tuesday. I'm very excited. We're going to preview the NBA season today. I have a series of questions for you, Bobby. I have some fill in the blanks. I have some true or false.
Oh, boy.
And I want to start off with
multiple.
Some of this.
I'm better multiple choice. You know, you got me thinking on fill in the blanks.
I mean, multiple choice. You can just circle C, right? You know, just, I haven't done C in a while. So we'll start off with some more timely stuff with the news lately. Russell Westbrook has signed with the Sacramento Kings. Keegan Murray signed a big 5-year, $140 million extension, rookie extension with the Sacramento Kings as well. And Bobby, I'll tell you what, when I look at the Kings roster, I just see a bunch of weird, you know, ill-fitting names together. The roster just feels like a big mess to me when I look at it. So I'm curious, how do you think this season goes for the Kings? Is it going to be good, bad, or ugly?
I don't think they'll make the play-in. I think they're must-watch because of the, as you said, the mixed bag of players. I mean, certainly Westbrook is almost like must-see TV in itself because it's, as we've said, it's the roller coaster ride of Russell Westbrook here. There's the good, the bad, and everything in between. You look at their roster, there's a lot of guys on there, Kevin, that I would like on my team, but not together, right? Like I would like Domantas Sabonis on my team. I would like DeMar DeRozan, and certainly based on if I had a style that fit his need. I would like Dennis Schroeder. I think you saw what the good things he did last year in Detroit. But them all together, that's probably a little bit of a different, animal, especially you're going to lose Keegan Murray to start the season with that thumb injury. So you probably won't get him back until probably around Thanksgiving time, at least. And it's the bench is the bench, right? It's a bunch of young players with Reynard, who they drafted, and Clifford. And then you have Westbrook coming off the bench too, likely coming off the bench, I assume he is. You know, listen, they're going to try to preach a defensive identity under Doug Christie. It's probably a team that's probably more built to be more offensively. So I think this is a good season. It's probably at best contending for a play-in. But as you know, in the Western Conference, that that is going to be extremely, extremely challenging.
Oh, for sure, it's going to be challenging for them. And ultimately for the Kings, I feel like I look at this roster and all the veteran names. Yeah, they'd be good in certain situations. And I like the youth. I mean, you know, even if you want to throw Keon Ellis in there, I love Neat Clifford, the first round pick last year. Maxime was one of my favorite centers in last year's draft class. I felt like he should have been a first round pick. Getting him in the second round, I think, is really good value for the Sacramento Kings with his versatility and shooting ability off the dribble game. It's just a matter of what his defense becomes. I like the youth. So for me, if I'm a Kings fan, I want it to be bad. I want it to miss the playoffs. I want to have a lottery pick. I want to have a chance to get one of those top three or four picks in this year's loaded 26 draft. That's the way I'd feel as a Kings fan this year. It's just a real, you know, mismatch between the vets fitting together and these like quality young players that are worthy of development. I just feel like the Kings are going a route where they're just going to be stuck in the middle, miss the play-in, but you know, still win mid-30s games or something like that and not have top odds. Not that those are always rewarded with the flattened odds these days.
Well, it's almost like Chicago West a little bit, right? I mean, certainly there's two of the players with DeRozan and LaVine are on this roster here. I don't know if they're bad enough to totally bottom out. That's the problem. Mm-hmm. I do think it's interesting you have a new you have a new general manager in Scott Perry, who really has no ties to this roster at all. Like he walks into a situation where really the only, he drafted Clifford and Reynard, and he signed Schroeder in the offseason. Everybody else is players that he inherited from the previous regime. It does make it a little bit easier to kind of put your fingerprints and basically, whether it be to try to move off some pieces with this group. I still think the LaVine number is still high, even though he's got a player option for next year. But what does that mean for DeRozan? But I look at the Western Conference and the bottom teams, whether it be teams like Utah in that mix, where they're in the mix with probably where Portland is. Although I like Portland probably a little bit better than them. New Orleans, of course. But there's so many bad teams in the Eastern Conference that I don't think it's hard for me to see them getting a top four. But you never know. Lady Luck in the lottery can get them there. But it's hard for me to see them finishing with a bottom five record.
For sure. I mean, we saw with Dallas, 11th best odds. There's been teams that have moved up. The first year with the flattened odds, I think the Pelicans had, the 8th or 9th best odds, yeah. And they move up and get one to get Zion. Speaking about luck on lottery night, the Spurs. Victor Wembanyama just absolutely dominating this preseason. He looks definitely stronger. He's just big manning opponents, getting to the rim at will more often. Dylan Harper has looked good as well, especially getting to the basket. Feels like a veteran. And so if you look at the Spurs on BetMGM right now, they have the 9th highest finals odds of all the Western Conference teams.
Man,
do you think that's Western too high?
I thought that was all teams. Yes. I was like, whoa,
just the West. Is that too high, too low, or just right, Bobby?
I think it's just right. I think they're probably, you look at it from if you were looking at the standings, I think it's a team that will contend for a play-in spot here. I think that, the biggest questions for me were the three guards with Fox, Castle, and Harper, how they would play together. Fox has been out all preseason with the hamstring. We saw some really good things when Harper played in the preseason game last week. And then you're watching, you're like, did you really need De'Aaron Fox now? Like maybe, mm-hmm. If you had a crystal ball and knew that you had Dylan Harper and Stephen Castle on your roster already, like, do you really, would you give up, what you did to go out and to get De'Aaron Fox? So that's, for me, is like the big question with them. But I do think that number probably fits in well just based on the other teams. Like, I think Memphis is a wild. I mean, look at the gap between San Antonio and Memphis, right? As far as the numbers, right? As far as what people think. And I think the Memphis number is probably a good one for them. Is it the big thing certainly is what else, the Luke Kornet fit, which I think will fit in nicely with Victor, him playing through a full season. He didn't do that last year. But I'm not ready to kind of put them up there where I do think there's separation where they are. And then where, certainly where Dallas and Golden State and the Clips, some of those other teams.
I think that's totally fair. I'd agree with you. 9th feels appropriate right now. But with that said, I do think it's intriguing in the sense that if Victor Wembanyama does take another massive leap and becomes a guy that gets MVP votes or, finishes in some people's top three, top four, top five ballots. If you have a player of that caliber on your team surrounded by pretty good pieces, anytime you have a player like that, in theory, you always have a chance. Right, Bobby? So, I think it's really comes down to the question about the fit around Victor, to your point about the guards, and then also, what does Victor actually become? Does he become one of the 2-3 best players in basketball by April at that point? But ultimately, I do think it is going to be fascinating. They're without De'Aaron Fox right now. Harper and Castle are excelling. Again, just preseason, but they look great. Castle looks like he has improved. Small sample. Harper looks very comfortable very early on here. When Fox returns, missing camp, missing preseason, it's very possible that it's going to be a weird fit all of a sudden with all three of those guards together.
Well, especially that he, him and Victor, I think they played, 5 games together after the trade? So there wasn't like a
great start either.
Yeah, it wasn't like they had a 2-month, runway to play together here. So the mix of guards will certainly be something to watch. I do think it's interesting. And I always kind of go back, Kevin, when Giannis took that huge leap in Milwaukee, certainly a little bit different players, but you forget when you have like a generational player, a franchise level player that Victor could be, like if you just put the right pieces around, it's not really about going out and getting the right star power when Milwaukee was able to go get Holiday and then Middleton, you know, all these different Lopez, like all these different, you know, players around him. And you're like, well, wait a minute. Maybe he doesn't need like two all-NBA players with him. Like, no, he's that good that if you have, whether it be shooters, whether it be a guy like Luke Kornet around him, like then you can potentially take that next step with the roster.
Yeah, I'm with you there with Victor. And I mean, the dude at some point is going to be the best player in the world. It's just a matter of when, not if, I'd say, with Victor. Let's move on to the Cleveland Cavaliers. Lonzo Ball looks healthy so far in preseason. It's been really fun to watch. Do you think Lonzo Ball could prove to be the most underrated acquisition this offseason?
I do, just because I remember when they did that deal, it was on that Saturday right before I think free agency officially started. And you're thinking, all right, you're probably going to lose Ty Jerome. Where's your insurance policy? And they wind up getting, Lonzo in that deal. I think the biggest thing is, and I think they've come out and said it, that the likelihood is that he's not playing back-to-backs, right? At least in the beginning part of the season, and then where his minutes are. But man, I think you have to like what you've seen so far with him on the court. It's funny. It always goes back to that saying. I said this was like 5 or 6 years ago, and I know they're totally different players. And it's like when Kawhi was out for all that time in San Antonio, and then he played in Toronto. You're like, man, this guy's pretty good. You know, it's like you forget about how good players are when they're gone for, in Lonzo's case, I know we saw a little bit last year with Chicago, but had been out for so long and had done some really nice things when he first got to Chicago. And there were some nice things in, whether it be the Lakers or New Orleans here, you do forget how good a player he is. And they're going to need him. The beauty of why Cleveland was successful last year is because they did a really good job of managing Donovan Mitchell's minutes. I believe he played a career low last year in Cleveland, but now you have, you know, the Strus injury with the foot. You know, you're bringing back Darius Garland from the offseason, the toe surgery. You're going to need him, even if it's his minutes are limited, if they're 20 minutes a game, you're going to need him to play like he's played in preseason so far.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, at a minimum, Lonzo just makes things funner. I mean, the speed in which he plays with. Later in the show, I bring on Tyrese Halliburton, and we talk a little bit about some Kenny Atkinson comments from their Pacers-Cavs second-round series, where Kenny Atkinson always talked about the force and speed that the Pacers always played with from minute one to minute 48, how rare that was and how special that was. And he talked about how there's a kind of a mentality shift that needs to happen for the Cavs. Lonzo Ball, I think, is exactly the type of player who can kind of just, his presence brings that to the court with your players.
You would have loved to have him in game two, bringing that ball up the court at the end against that Indiana team. And that's, you know, it's such, you know, this is such, the league is so hard. I had a team ask me this question, just threw it out. He's like, you know, how do you go from good to great? And then when you look at it, like Cleveland was a great regular season team. Right. Like as far as what they were able to do. And then you get to the postseason and they run through Miami and then they lose to Indiana. And you're questioning, well, are they tough enough? Right. Are they mentally tough enough to get through, you know, some of a series when you get pushed, when you're up big down the stretch and you wind up losing the lead and you get a Halliburton three to win it. And now you're down 2-0. Are you mentally tough? And that's, you sometimes don't find that out until the playoffs start. And that's why I think for Cleveland, and we've talked about them and certainly New York, they're going to, I think, have their way a little bit with the Eastern Conference just because it is so open. But I'm not ready to cast them as the team to win the East or to win it all just because of what I saw last year in that second round.
Yeah, I'm exactly with you there, Bobby. I mean, every word you said 100% true. And you mentioned good to great. That leads me to my next question here. Because the East is so open, what needs to happen for the Pistons to go from a first-round exit team to at least a conference finalist? Because they're the type of team that, in an open East, you feel like, oh, we got a chance if we just take a leap. So how do they take that leap going from good to great?
That's the hardest thing. You ask any team executive, it's the hardest thing. Like those feel good stories. It's almost like the Indiana teams, like when Bogdanovic was there, like, you know, remember like the teams that were like after they had traded Paul to OKC and they're like, wow, this is a fun team. They won 40.
Yes.
And then they're like, wait a minute, they can't get out of the 7-8 seed for 3 years in a row.
and those like, teams could disappear quick. The Kings were, you know, they were lighting the beam. It's the best it's been in decades. And
they were the 3 seed. They were the 3 seed, right? Like we thought here, they finally have that foundation and everything. I think Detroit is... And you're right. How do you go from a team that was, what, 6 seed or, you know, a top 6 seed in the Eastern Conference? And then how do you go to be a top 4 team? And the dynamics of the roster have changed a little bit when they made a priority last offseason, shooting, to go out and whether it be Malik Beasley and then you had Tim Hardaway Jr.
Yep.
And then you out and get Schroeder at the deadline because Ivy had gotten hurt. You have replaced those guys with Duncan Robinson and you know, certainly Caris LeVert, who you signed as a free agent here. So you do have some shooting. I think people forget you get Jaden Ivey back, who was having a really good year before he had that injury that cost him that. It's going to be like, how do you go from like, yeah, as we said, good to great? I think in Detroit's situation, how do you go to a top 4 team? Some of it's going to be really from internal. You know how good Cade is, you know, certainly an all NBA type player, but what's the leap of Jalen Duren? What's the leap of Asar Thompson? Some of those other players, you have Tobias Harris, and then it will come down to like, sometimes, Kevin, when you're trying to make that leap, it comes with the risk, right? The risk of, okay, we have a big expiring contract in Tobias Harris, and now finally we have all our draft picks. Like, yes. Are we willing to like be, I don't want to say conservative, but be safe, right? Like there's the safe route is like, you know what? Let's just develop within, let's see where we go, and hopefully that's good enough. Most of the time it's not. I mean, it's probably good enough to be a 6, 7, or 8 seed, but most of the time it's not to get to a 3 or 4 seed. We've talked about
how many, you know, how many teams do it all internally, Bobby, right?
I mean, God.
Like OKC had to get Hartenstein and Caruso, right? Like to take that. The Bucks with Jrue Holiday and Brook Lopez and Chris Middleton, you have to find guys externally. It's just part of it.
Even Houston, Houston went through that period with, you know, after they had traded James, Kevin Porter Jr., Jalen Green, right? Like, you know, Sengun was terrific. And then they were a great story last year. And then they lose to Golden State in the first round. They're like, nope, we need help. Bring on Kevin Durant, right? Yeah. Like, it like, you kind of like bang your... I went through that. Yeah, I went through it in you know, certainly in Brooklyn. Like, listen, how do you go, you know, from a decent team to try to take a next step? And then the downfall is that when you make a high risk move, it comes with a lot of, you know, as I said, the safety net is removed. And that's for me, when I look at Detroit, there's no reason why. It's funny. Orlando and Atlanta are like the darlings of the summer. Like they are, like everybody has been talking about them because of what they've been able to do, whether it be Desmond Bane and Tyus Jones or Porzingis and Alexander Walker and Kennard and, you know, you still have Daniels and Young in Atlanta. There's no reason why Detroit should not be mentioned with these teams. Sometimes we talk about, like, you know, maybe it's just because they were a little bit safer this offseason. They didn't make a big splash here. But I do think if they are going to take that big jump and it's not going to be in a trade market, it's going to have to be within you know, their own homegrown guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately, if they can use that Harris salary and some future picks, go get like a Lauri Markkanen, like somebody in
go.
That realm. Like, yep. To me, that like lifts a lot of their potential up, especially, you know, with some of those supporting pieces. If they get a little bit of internal development as well, suddenly, who knows? The Pistons could be playing in late May, and you never know what could happen if you get to that point of the season. Next question here, Bobby. Anthony Edwards, so far in preseason, he's only 1 of 6. from the post scoring. So it hasn't been a great start with his experimentation, integrating the low and mid post into his game, but it seems like he's committed to trying it. If the addition of a low post game for Anthony Edwards is as successful as his increased three-point rate was last year, does that at all change Minnesota's title outlook for you?
I think it does. I'm just interested if he kind of goes back to become, like, I don't want to say just becoming a three-point shooter, but we saw last year his numbers really jumped. I think as he was north of 10 attempts per game, and he was right around like 6 or 7 the year before. If he struggles in the post, and that's certainly been well documented as far as him working on that, does he just kind of resort back to kind of where he was a year ago here? I've said all along, like, I think, as you know, great, yes, Anthony Edwards, what he does will play a huge role with where Minnesota goes. I joked, I was like, yeah, they're kind of like the Buffalo Bills of not this current Bill, maybe this current Bills, but the ones in the 90s, right? Who kept on getting to an AFC
Patriots back
game.
In first place, Bobby. We're back. All is right in the world
I'll tell
now.
You what, I'll tell you what, Kevin. I mean, I know we're talking NBA here, but as a Jets fan, I don't understand how we haven't made the playoffs since 2011 when Mark Sanchez, that's a different story, was the quarterback. And what I didn't realize, when Nick Folk was our kicker, Nick Folk, the kicker. And I watched it. I clicked on the first game of the year when they played the Steelers, and this guy was still kicking for us. I'm sure there was a gap in between. And I said, when our best player is a guy who was on our championship or team that went to the AFC championship in 2000. And then I look at the Patriots, who were not very good. You know, we're not very good post Brady. Uh-huh. And then all of a sudden they're 4-2. And I look at some of the other team. I'm like, what in the heck am I missing here? Like, how do we like turn this thing around?
I mean, we're talking about going from good to great. The Jets can't even go from crap to average.
Just give me 8-8, man. Just give me in contention down the stretch. I looked up a stat. I'm on like footballreference.com and like on a Sunday. And I'm like, let me see this to how this team start, like their first three games, like the last 7 years, what their record was. Kevin, it was like 6-24. We've been eliminated going into week 4 every year.
So
it's one of them. It's unbelievable. I don't care who's coach. I like Aaron Glenn. I don't know who's coaching. I don't know how this turns around. I really don't. But that's
to your point. You'd rather be the Bills losing in high leverage games in the deep into the postseason than being at the bottom. And that's where, like with Minnesota, you'd rather be them, even though you're losing.
I can't even tell you, like, we're gonna tank for Victor or Cooper Flag. Like, we're gonna get a defensive tackle from Miami? God, like, great, you know.
Oh, I mean, you could have said maybe Arch Manning, but it hasn't been a great year for him. God, last time really paid attention to college football. Hopefully the college prospects fare much better than so far.
I know. I deviated off the Minnesota back. Yeah. I do think I've said this during the summer league. I do think the success of Minnesota is really going to come with some of the younger players, though. I really do. I think we saw some really good things from Terrence Shannon Jr. last year during the regular season and certainly in the postseason. Dillingham's like the biggest wild card for me as far as
they
what
need
he,
him, Bobby.
I know they really do. And especially with Conley in last year, and are they going to pass the torch to, is Dillingham the guy? Berenger, I think we've seen some really good things. And we saw it in the first game of summer league. And then, in a little bit in the preseason here, because you lost Alexander Walker, guy, you know, a shooter off the bench and stuff. So I think a lot of the success really is going to come with some of these youngsters. As good as Anthony Edwards has been, and as good as maybe him, if his post game develops, and maybe it opens up for a lot of things, but it will come down to some of those former first round picks.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I mean, ultimately, like Mike Conley, just they can't rely on him too much anymore. Dillingham to me just raises your ceiling more. Even if he, you know, might lower your floor a little bit, which I don't think he does, he definitely raises your ceiling. If Chris Finch makes that investment over the course of the season, and we saw last year, Terrence Shannon barely played all season. And then he gets postseason opportunities, making a positive impact. Sometimes, like, I think you got to invest in your youth. And those are the guys who can be ceiling raisers, especially for like a team like Minnesota, where they kind of have their established veterans. And you hope Anthony Edwards takes more leaps. But like, they need those other X factors on the team. And Shannon and Dillingham in particular, Bobby, I think that is spot on for a team that they don't necessarily have a trade to make either. I don't know the route there unless you're totally reshuffling your roster. So it's got to come internally from Ant and the other young guys.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing, and I know it's easy to say, but it's hard to do in the Western Conference, and this can go for a bunch of these teams, is like, don't be afraid to fail with experimenting with lineups. Like, that's the biggest thing. Like, you look at, like, what OKC, and I know the Holmgren injury last year forced them to kind of change some things around, but the lineup they used when Chet was out was, like, their most used lineup in their starting lineup in the regular season. We didn't even see that lineup in the playoffs here. So I think even if it's, I know the goal is to keep your head above water and be a top six team in the West and how good it is, but I think you can't be afraid to fail with an experiment with some lineups.
I mean, Dagnall himself said it last year in the middle of March or whatever, when Chet and Hartenstein were both finally back, and he said in a media scrum, we're putting these lineups out there even in situations that might not be advantageous for us, because we're doing it to experiment and get ready for the postseason. And obviously that's the advantage of being a one seed. Well, you have a cushion. Maybe Minnesota's in a position where they're the four or the five, but ultimately I think it's critical to do that over the course of the year. Let's go to some fill in the blanks here, Bobby. Starting off with number six, Cooper Flagg plays all 82 games, but he doesn't win Rookie of the Year. The winner is blank.
Dylan Harper.
Okay, Dylan Harper. So what type of year does Dylan Harper have then? Is this like Fox missing time? Is this him taking a bigger than expected role? How does that happen?
I think the Fox hamstring, it's hamstring, right? I think the Fox hamstring lingers. And I think the role of Harper is going to be expanded more than probably what they thought it could be.
Yeah, and with hammies, those can linger, especially for a speedy guy like Fox. So, I mean, even if he's playing through it, maybe it's taking a little bit of a back seat. And Dylan Harper, dude's advanced, getting to the basket. It's just a matter of what level his jumper reached. I think Dylan Harper's a good choice. Yeah. I think Ace Bailey would be the other one.
Yeah. Because
with Ace Bailey,
getting a ton of opportunity. Free reign.
Yes.
It's going to be free reign out there.
He might average 20 plus. What if he's also super efficient and he's doing all the right things for the Jazz, which he has been so far in preseason? So I'd say I think Dylan Harper is a good choice, but Ace Bailey probably the other one. Anybody else, I'd be like floored if they would have been Rookie of the Year. Number seven here. The biggest hole on the Knicks is blank.
Ooh, man. I mean, Malcolm Brogdon retires. You thought you had some guard depth with him. I think it's I want to say another wing off the bench. And that probably is the case if Hart starts, Robinson comes off the bench, and now you've got a little bit of a hole there. But I do think some shooting off the bench. Are you going to get that if you keep Landry Shamet? But I think bench scoring, scoring off the bench.
Yeah, I think that's a good one. I mean, I worry about the Mitchell Robinson health aspect. How durable can he be with how good that two big rotation was last season when they rolled those two guys out there together? That's where I'd go for the Knicks. Number eight, the head coach on the hottest seat entering the season is?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, God, that is a great question. Man, Nick Nurse, not by fault. I mean, I think Nick Nurse is a good coach too. I think Philadelphia is going to be like just under the microscope big time here with, and it's really not to his doing, but I think when you look at in the Embiid situation, which I'm going to be interested if he plays in a preseason game before we get going here. The Paul George situation, expectations, probably not as high as a year ago. I would probably put Nick up there, though. I don't think it's rightful, but I just think there's so much probably this potential distractions within that organization.
Yeah, and I think that that might be the only choice. Like maybe Willie Green.
I know. I was thinking.
There's not many, right? Is Willie Green really the only other one? New front office there. They keep the head coach.
Yeah, I mean, you could say Willie Green, but what is the expectations in that team? I mean, the only thing is that like, you know, like you, I always watch these games, like we'll get to like November and I'm like, ooh, that's a game that's going to that might get a guy fired, right? Like, you know, if there's a string of that in New Orleans for them. But really that would be the only guy that would probably come to mind.
Chris Finch, maybe. Maybe that's the only other one. I think just those
three.
Yeah,
you never know, especially with the new ownership group. This is their first full year immersed in that.
If they underwhelm, if they're like slightly above 500, looking like a 7 seed, I could see that as well.
Possible.
But not the hottest today. Not the hottest today.
No, not the hottest. And I don't think there's really a hot, like going into the season.
Well, how about from a front office perspective, the GM on the hottest seat entering the season is blank.
Oh my God. It feels like I want to stay with Philly. I mean, I don't know. I mean,
it really might be. They're linked, right?
I mean, it's funny, you know, Darryl was applauded last year when they went out and signed Paul George and some of the things they did with their roster. I think certainly there's an expect, you know, it's interesting when you also have an ownership group that owns the Commanders and you come off last year making the playoffs and you're like, well, I want that for our group. I think you would certainly have to point at what happened in, you know, in Washington, as far as how you related to Philadelphia here. I think the only way it becomes really hot for them is, you know, Embiid misses a considerable chunk of games. Paul George is not the Paul George that we saw prior to that. And this team wins 25 to 30 games in a really, you know, a little bit of a depleted Eastern Conference here. But it's hard for me to, I mean, who do you have up there, Kevin?
I mean, I think Morey would probably be the one that comes to mind first, but I think that's completely misled if that is actually the case, because he's drafted incredibly well. Paul George, whether or not he works out, they planned it out, it worked out, and we hope he has a bounce back year.
Listen, we all gave them A's. You know, I remember going on the show and it made it like, you know, and be like, hey, you're like, listen, he was the best free agent. They had the cap space to go out. The money was going to go out. I think
it's the best choice, Bobby, right?
Yeah. What VJ Edgecombe can do this year, I think that Maxi backcourt, I think, could be really fun and intriguing and stuff like that. So it's
Jared, you know, McCain. Hopefully he can stay healthy this year once he's back. Yeah. I mean, if you stack up Philly's young guys, Maxi, McCain, VJ Edgecombe, this is a really good core of young players.
See what Adembona might be, an interesting second round pick.
I like him.
If he should play a lot because their front court depth is not great. So we could probably see him a bunch. But yeah, the expectations from front office. It is funny, like we all live in this honeymoon period from when the season ends, or from probably like July 1 to like right now, and then we start playing these games next week, and it's like, God, keep your fingers crossed, and hopefully it works out.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only other one that would come to mind in the East, at least off the top of my head, Sean Marks with Brooklyn. He's been there for so long. But again, they kept him into the owner season.
Listen, you had the owner come out in last week when they were in overseas and basically say we are positioning ourselves for a good pick, which they almost have to. And the crazy thing is, like, I think Jordy Fernandez is a terrific coach. Like, and I said, like, this last year, like, they're winning too many games. Like, the coach, because he basically coaches his ass off and stuff like that. I think it'll be a little bit different this year just because this team is so, talk about lineup experimentation, right? Like, as far as how many young kids they have on this team and everything. I think they're all in on being bad.
Does Nico, if the Mavericks underwhelm, could Nico Harrison be actually the right answer here?
Possibly, but I think the Kyrie being out kind of gives you a little bit of little bit of rope there. I think they're intrigued. I think it's a matter of, like, what's their record when Kyrie comes back could play a role. If they're not, listen, if AD gets hurt and they really struggle in the beginning, I don't think they will. I think they just have so much depth with their roster here that they can get through here. But I would say maybe, but I think things would really have to go really south.
Yeah. I think so as well. Next question here. We see over the years guys like Aaron Gordon as midseason acquisitions to contending teams and helps them take a leap. And sometimes those players make more progress after they're acquired. The next Aaron Gordon to be traded is?
Oh my God. I feel like I have like PTSD from here. I always think of like Rasheed Wallace as the next, who the next, then I'm going back to 2004. When freaking Atlanta traded him to Detroit and they wound up winning a champion. I'm in New Jersey thinking like, that's all they'd got for him, you know, like, and they wound up winning a championship in Detroit. Who could be, you mentioned Markkanen's a really intriguing name. I know it's, you know, he's on a max deal, but that could be a guy that maybe could shift the balance a little bit here. When we look at where, you know, in the league here, that would be an interesting name.
Yeah, I think Markkanen's a good one. What about Austin Reeves? Like, if the Lakers were to flip him and some type of deal, and he lands on a good team, like Austin Reeves with more opportunity, and which we'll see him early in the season. Yep. No LeBron, at least to start the year. Could Austin Reeves maybe be one of those guys? I'm just trying to think of any others.
Yeah, I mean that's a really good name because I think
Kobe White.
Yeah, Kobe White's a good name. Certainly who. Basically said he's not going to sign an extension with Chicago and is going to play out the year. Same with Austin Reeves. The two guys will be probably two of the better potential free agents next offseason. I think the Lakers situation in general is really intriguing to me just based on we have the LeBron injury. We've got, as I call it, the two timeline team with Luka and LeBron. Where do they fit in the Western Conference? Does this team struggle without LeBron? Do they have enough scoring? Where are they come the deadline? Is there a fire sale if they're not in contention, because they do have their draft pick this year in a really good, a potentially really good draft and everything like that. But certainly Reeves would be a guy that would be, I think he can turn the fortunes of a team to the positive.
Well, I mean, funny you mentioned all that possibility. It leads to the next question. If LeBron James asks out, his most likely destination is blank.
Oh, my goodness. So we got to eliminate I guess we could take this in like multiple different phases here. So the buyout, if he ever said, I want to be bought out, we basically eliminate all the apron teams. So we we eliminate the Clevelands and the Dallases and the Golden States and New York and that whole contingent. Where, if it was a straight trade, I think we can eliminate Cleveland. I think Dallas would be probably, we can eliminate them. I just think they're gutting it for, LeBron. Where is he health-wise? I mean, you always think New York, potentially.
I think
because they do have some, they do have the contracts, whether it be the big towns number. Or some of these, the OG
Bridges, Hart combo, might be.
That group, I think it would probably lean back towards New York.
Yeah, I think I'd say the Knicks for sure. I mean, I'd say Knicks number one and then everybody else. If he were to be traded midseason, the Knicks make sense for salary purposes, for roster fit purposes, for what they could, desire, what they feel like they might need to take a leap. So I'd say the Knicks, and also for LeBron. I mean, it's Madison Square Garden. He's always called it his favorite arena. He could be a quote-unquote savior, if he does help take them to a championship for the first time in decades. So there's that with him as well. Other than that, I mean, you kind of removed Cleveland pretty quickly. Yeah. They could use.
They could. I mean, they're over the second apron. They would basically have to trade like three, like Garland and Allen, and like basically trade like $80, $90 million in salary to be able to do it. I don't know if it's, I think a lot of it would be like where health wise, right? Like where is he with the sciatica? Where is he with the back? That would be the biggest concern, because it's like, you could have made the case, Kevin, like, Well, yeah, like, you know, he still has a couple more good, really good years left. I don't know if that's the case right now until I see him play a stretch of games, you know, for looking long term for next year.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. Be funny, though. Can you imagine that? LeBron James traded midseason to the New York Knicks. Well, talk about breaking social media.
It would be good for content, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, it really would be. If Shams drops that bomb, it might exceed the Luka trade last year. It could.
Yeah.
I don't know if that were to happen. Number 12 here, Bobby. Let's do some true or false as the closeout here.
Yeah.
True or false, the Thunder will repeat as champions.
I'm going to say false. Only because I had to send in to ESPN. They sent an email for our finals prediction and who's winning it all. And to be different, because I'm sure everybody else was probably putting Oklahoma City, I said the Denver Nuggets will come out of the Western Conference this year.
Good choice. That's a really good choice.
You know, the Jalen Williams injury is a little intriguing for me. I wish I would have known that when I said they were going to win 70 games last week on NBA Today and basically blew up social media and stuff. Like, I think it is hard to, you know this. It's hard to repeat. I mean, you went through with, you know, we all had Boston after they won the championship as like, you know, and then you get the Tatum injury and things happen. And I don't want that with Oklahoma City. But I do think things happen during the course of the year or in the playoffs here. And I think this Denver team could be really, really good. I mean, I like the games they've played in the preseason, like preseason was usually like throwaway games, like Valanciunas, Jokic, right? Like where I said into our group, I think Jamal Murray is a big X factor just because he
looks good. The Olympics. Healthiest, quickest, you know, most agile he's been entering a season in many years, certainly since the title year.
Yeah. I mean, if Christian Brown can be consistent shooting the ball, like, you know, a lot of his points have come at the rim on fast breaks and layups in transition, swapping out Cam Johnson, Michael Porter Jr. for Cam Johnson. And then, of course, we've talked about the bench with Brown and Hardaway and Valanciunas. They are really, really intriguing for me. So I would say false. I will give me Denver because I do think they are a much – and we forget, people forget, like, this was a Oklahoma City team that was – we were going to be talking about them if they had lost to Denver in that seventh game. Like, what do we do with the Thunder now? Is it time to break them up? Like, is it like, do they need something different? Like that was the team in Indiana, of course, too, that really pushed them the most in those playoffs.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think, you know, Denver with their improvements, I haven't made my official pick yet. I would lean false to pick the field. Just because it's so hard to repeat. But ultimately, like Denver's improvements and now the additional lineup flexibility they have now, it gives them something that really they didn't even have in the Jokic title year. I mean, like having the backup centers that they have now with both Holmes and Valanciunas gives them immense flexibility on top of the Bruce Brown additions and Hardaway and among others. It's a very versatile team now with the amount of depth and different lineups they can throw out there. Our number 13. By season, well, first let me preface it with saying this. Everybody's releasing their top 100 rankings right now. And you look around at all of them, the consensus rankings, if you compile all of them together, most people have Jaylen Brown in the teens. He's the consensus 17th ranked player in the NBA. And then Derek White is 36th ranked. I was at the Celtics-Raptors preseason game on Wednesday night and saw Derek White go off for 33 points and high volume. We've seen Derek White have some high scoring games before. By season's end, will Derek White be widely considered a better player than Jaylen Brown? True or false?
I think false, but I do think he'll be considered a top 25 player.
So you think he rises up the ranks?
I do. I mean, like, I think I said this last year. I said, like, everybody needs a Derek White. It's like almost like everybody needs an Alex Caruso, right? Like a guy that can do on both ends of the court. I do think he'll rise up. I do think he'll rise up the ranks. I think Boston might surprise people because I think Joe Mazzulla is a terrific coach and they'll be able to score with any team out there. The question will be front court, if they have enough in the front court here. But I don't think he'll surpass Jaylen Brown, but I do think he'll hit that ranking mid-30s will be higher than, or lower, I guess, than it probably should be.
Yeah, I'm actually a little surprised the consensus has him only at 36. I think he belongs in the top 30 as is.
But, you think top 100 rankings are the most like water cooler, like critics, like people like that is like the hot button thing as far as top 100 rankings?
Isn't it funny how they are? Like they just everybody always that gets people going. People love rankings, but even though it's like you're comparing apples and oranges when you compare like Rudy Gobert to Darius Garland, like big center and point guards. Like they're different categories of players.
I know.
It really doesn't make any sense. Funny.
It's so funny. We had like I think in ESPN we had like Tyler Hero was really like I think like 69th or something. And I was like, oh my god! Nice. And then the fortunate thing, he got hurt before it came out. And I was like, oh, I guess we get a pass a little bit here. But it is like most of them you get it right in the top 10 probably, right? Like when you're just like looking at like Jokic and Shea and Luka and Giannis and the three older players with Curry, LeBron, and Durant, and then maybe you sprinkle Brunson in there and like, you know, all these different things. It's the ones like in that 25 to 100 range, which is like, it is impossible. Tough, man. Like that is good luck.
I know. Because you would rank it differently for every team, every philosophy, every system. It's just, it's impossible to do. Number 14 here, Zion Williamson will have the best season of his career. True or false?
True. I do think, I need to, whatever diet he was on, like send that down to Southwest Florida. I mean, goodness gracious,
those GLPs, the GLPs. I tried it out earlier in the year in January. I did it for 5 weeks. It didn't do well with my body.
I ordered something off the internet like this. I don't even know. I saw it on Facebook and I was like, I think I actually gained weight from whatever I took. So I was like, nah, I'm good. I think he will. I just look at he's only been available. I think he's played 46% of regular season games since he's come into the league. I think it's like now or never, right? I think he's in the best condition, shape, all that together. I just remember going back. I was last year in March. I was in LA watching them play the Lakers, and like he was the best player on the court with LeBron and Luka. Like he was better than the two of them. So I do think it's almost like we're kind of in a now or never year. If it's not now, I don't know when it will ever be.
Yeah, it's gotta be this year. And I would say true as well. I do think this will be the best year of his career. I'm also might just be wishful thinking. I'm hoping it's the best season of his career. Number 15, I got two more for you, Bobby. Number 15, Lauri Markkanen will still be with Utah Jazz after the trade deadline. True or false?
I'm going to say false, just based on we've talked about him a little bit here. He can finally be traded this year. Last year, he couldn't. But I do think it's a tougher decision if you're starting with Austin Ainge now overseeing everything. It is a little bit of a tougher decision because at the end of the day, you do have to like take a little bit of a jump as far as where you are. They have so many young players here. I think it's a matter, of course, what you get back. But I think for this question, I would say false.
Yeah, I think that's fair with Lowry. And ultimately, though, offers, if they're significant, like if a team, we talked about Detroit earlier, if they're willing to put on expiring salary Tobias Harris and four future firsts, I mean, might be hard to say no if a team is like, this is the guy who's going to put us over the top, put us in a position to win a title. And if you're the Jazz, like there's a line where you just have to say yes, I would imagine.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. It's basically the Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert pack. I mean, basically the Gobert package. It's hard. Those are hard to turn down.
Number 16, Reed Sheppard will end up primarily filling the Fred VanVleet role in Houston, not Amen Thompson.
I'm going to say false. I think we're going to see a heavy dose of Amen Thompson at point guard. I think you'll probably see a lot of the offense will go through Şengün, like we've seen. I think Sheppard comes off the bench and gives you some shooting that you much needed. So I'm going to say that's false.
And bonus question here, since you wrote on ESPN.com a big article this morning about the upcoming rookie max extensions with Tim Bontemps. Yes. Who's the most interesting player of that group? The one you're most excited to see, most confused about what's going to go down? Who's the one you're most intrigued by from the rookie extension candidates?
I will say it's going to be interesting. So we've had the last prior 2 years, we've had 25 rookies extend, 11 last year, 14 in the year before. I think we're going to go lower than 11 total. I think we're at six right now with the Murray extension. The most interesting one for me is Dyson Daniels in Atlanta. It's funny, the Jalen Suggs contract extension last year, which was 5 for $150, is like the most talked about extension with certainly when you talk to teams, and then when you're talking about Daniels, who probably has a better body of work than what Suggs had been able to do. If you're comparing third years in Orlando and then Atlanta here, do I think it's going to get to 5 for $150? I don't. But I do think he's a guy that could be in that $25 million range. You look at an Atlanta team that has a lot of expectations, and you have the future of Trae Young that you still have to figure out. That's the most intriguing one for me. I think Christian Brown in Denver also, just based on where Denver is financially. They're in a second apron team next year if you extend Brown and Peyton Watson. But I would say out of the two, it would probably be Dyson Daniels.
Yeah. I'm with you there. The Brown one, very interesting. Peyton Watson, too. I know you wrote about him as well. But Dyson Daniels, So freaking good. And seems like there's still room for improvement as well. So I look forward to seeing that number, if that extension does happen, or if he's going to test restricted free agency next year. And we'll see. There's always risk in doing that, as we found out with the whole Jonathan Kuminga saga and every other rookie that entered restricted free agency this summer that had issues signing extensions. Bobby, thank you so much for joining me today, man. Always so fun to podcast with you.
That was good, man. We didn't need to do multiple choice. See, like I can actually, I can take my Marist diploma and apply it to, I was never good at the SATs and stuff like that. So I'm glad it worked out. And I even got a Jets rant in there too.
Thank you so much, Bobby. I appreciate it, man. Have a great rest of your day. And hopefully we can talk again this season.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, coming up, we get Tyrese Halliburton talking about trends in the NBA, what we've seen, what's coming next. Really good conversation with Tyrese. And as a reminder, you can watch the Kevin O'Connor Show on the Yahoo Sports Network, which is available to stream on leading fast services. It's also streaming live 24/7 on yahoosports.tv, where you can catch all of the shows on your phone or your browser. All right, joining me now from the Indiana Pacers and star of Starting Five on Netflix, Tyrese Halliburton. Tyrese, how you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Appreciate you having me on.
I appreciate you joining me, man. So you're a Cubs and Dodgers fan now, huh?
man, I enjoy baseball, man. Enjoy watching good teams, man. I'm not a fan of anybody. I just like wear jerseys, you know? I don't know.
What happened with the Brewers fandom?
I couldn't tell you. I have no idea. They can understand from what I've said in past interviews. So it's just me. I'm a troll, but I be playing around. So it's not that serious. People take things in life too serious. I'm just
gonna have fun. You gotta laugh. Let's talk a little bit of basketball here, Tyrese, because I'm thinking like this season a lot about trends, because we see for sometime around the time where you enter the NBA, small ball is all the talk. And then this past season, more and more teams are seeing play with two bigs. And it seems like that's going to be an increasing trend this coming season. What do you think could be the next NBA trend?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I think what we're going to see this year, I think just in the NBA in general, right? You hear it all the time. Our league's a copycat league. You take what works and you see what the top teams are doing and you kind of try to steal from that. And I think obviously with Boston 2 years ago, it was shoot a million threes, right? And that everybody was trying to shoot more threes the following year. And I think from this last year, this finals, we see OKC playing two bigs, right? So that's why I think that will be a transition that's made. And then I've seen a lot of teams talk in the preseason this year about picking up full court more, which is something I feel like we as a group really brought to the playoffs last year. You know, sustaining that through seven games, I think, is easier than being able to sustain it for 82. But I think you're going to see a lot more full court pressure from many teams in the league. So I'm interested to see that. Obviously, every year, everybody talks about wanting to play faster. And I think teams can only do that if their guys are consistently willing to play that fast and kick it ahead and really fly up and down. So I feel like you'll hear teams talk about that, but I don't think that that's more of a personnel thing to have the capability to do that. But I think you're going to see a lot more backcourt pressure in our league this upcoming year. And I like to think that us as a group and the success we had last season will have a lot to do with that.
Well, you definitely do. I mean, if you even just look at the stats, the Pacers picked up the opponent ball handler in the backcourt last season 36.4 times per playoff game. And that was down slightly from the year prior in the postseason at 36.6. But those two marks were the highest of any playoff team in the entire tracking data era. So that's going back to the 2013-14 season. And that leads a trend across the league, because even if we omit the Pacers from that, the playoffs last year, we saw 30 times per game the opponent ball handler was picked up in the backcourt. And that's about double since the 2013 to 2016 range at 17 per game. And it's more than double during the regular season. And so, like, those aren't always like aggressive full court presses, as you're kind of describing. But what's behind the trend of that? Like, what is the benefit of that full court pressure picking up the ball handler above the backcourt?
Well, I think Coach Carlisle, obviously a genius, one of, if not the best mind in our league. I think something that we always speak about is just the wear down effect and wearing down on teams for seven games. We do it, I think, really after All-Star break. We did a great job of it, picking up more than, I don't know the stats, you probably do, but I assume that after All-Star break, we probably led the league in full court pressure. But I just think that Coach always talks about being able to wear on teams for 48 minutes. And if it doesn't affect them in the first quarter or the second quarter, or the third quarter, you get to getting their legs by the fourth, and that's when you go, you know? And I feel like Coach always speaks to that, and I think that that's something that I think that has proven to work, you know, especially with the success we had last year. But I just think it's where our game is, right? If you can try to force a team to play later in the shot clock, the more you benefit you are as a defense. And I think for us as a group, we have guys who really tone setters for our defense are Aaron Nesmith and Andrew Nembhard, and those guys they would pick up full court even if we weren't as a group. They're going to pick up because they're guarding the best player. So they're in their matchup, they're trying to wear down the guy, try to eat into his legs and, you know, give him missed shots. But I think what really took our group to the next level is everybody else buying into that. You know, like me, I'm not necessarily a defender elite or a good defender by any means, you know, but I think trying to just buy into that team aspect of how we're all picking up full court. I think me and Pascal buying into that second group with TJ and Ben Shepherd and Ben Mathurin and Obi Toppin, all, you know, being up full court, I think that as a group really, you know, fueled us. And I think those guys, Andrew and Aaron, kind of start that, and we just kind of, you know, follow suit.
One of the words that like keeps sticking with me is from Kenny Atkinson. Like during that whole Pacers-Cavs series, Kenny Atkinson kept talking about like the force that you guys played with. And after the series, he had this whole quote where he's like, you know, they play with force, you know, minute one to minute 48. And that's something like we need to, you know, take on. It's about part of a mental change, a mentality that team has, you know, in the other locker room, he was saying. And, you know, I feel like if teams do try to do this more often throughout the season, it's easier said than done to play that way, especially for, you know, October to April, never mind during just the playoffs. What are some of the things that you guys did do to sustain that? Is it like talking to each other? Is it something mental, or is it just the way you guys are wired as a team, like as individuals? Like what do you do to sustain that level of intensity and force?
I mean, I feel like the way we practice had a lot to do with it. I think back to last year, we were really struggling before the in-season tournament I think we were like one of the worst in-season tournament teams in the NBA. And then you get that week kind of while the finals are going, that we get to practice. You may have two games, but you get real practice time. And in that time, kind of not traditional in the NBA, we got real practice time to really like go back to like training camp of like, we're playing hard, we're taping, we're doing everything, you know. And I think our coaches just do a great job of, we have like our offense and our defensive splits where we're, you know, the first unit is on one side, the defense is, or the second unit's on the other, and we switch halfway through. And I think that we just do a good job of like, we're going to drill how we're going to play, and just our attention to detail. Coach Carlisle and his staff are very meticulous with everything that we do. And I feel like I've taken that from him. Like, if we're running 5-on-0, like, yo, this is, we need to do it this way. Like, I need to see it this way at this pace. And I feel like that just kind of trickles down our whole organization. So I feel like being detail oriented is part of it. And then I feel like you just, like, personnel wise, you just have to be willing to do it. Like, there has to be a full buy-in from a group to be able to do it. And I feel like I said, Andrew and Aaron kind of set the tone there, and everybody else kind of just bought into it. And we just kind of flowed from there, honestly. And I feel like that's a big part of it. Like I'm saying, I think it's going to be a trend in our league, but to be able to maintain that for 82 games is tough. Like, you know, like, you have to have a will to do it, the health aspect of it as well, right? Like, if you're picking up full court for a whole game, your body marks, you know what I mean? Like, by game 20, it could be like, yo, bro, I'm not going to continue to do this. I feel like I don't want to say easier, but in the playoffs where it's a 7-game series, at a maximum, you're playing 28 games, right? In the playoffs, 30 if you go from the plan, but like versus 82, like, it's a little different. So I'm curious to see how it trickles down the league. I hope that everybody is able to stay healthy and maintain it, because I think it's good for our league to see, you know, different things come. There's more zone, all these different things that I think. I like trends. I like seeing, you know, the game, you know, go in different ways.
You mentioned earlier how OKC played a bunch of two bigs. You know, obviously we say Houston do it with Steven Adams and Alperen Şengün just pounding the offensive glass. They rebounded like half their misses on offense during the season. And, you know, ideally, I think in the NBA, like, your bigs can shoot, or at least one of the bigs. But do you think there's a potential lane for teams to zag and go the other way and play like 90s or early 2000s style with two non-shooting bigs?
I think there's definitely a way. I think there's definitely a way. It just has to be figured out. You know, I think everything is crazy until somebody does it. And I think, like, the way our league is, like, I'm just not a believer in that basketball is point guard, shooting guard, small forward, power forward, center. The NBA doesn't, we don't have power forwards anymore. It's not a real thing. Like, the power forwards that I remember watching, like, when I was growing up, like, shout out to guys like, I'm not even thinking like KG and Tim Duncan. I'm thinking like dudes like Brandon Bass, David West, like, guys like that just, like, don't exist in our league anymore. You know, it's kind of like a lost art. Like, it's not really a thing. So I think that there's definitely a team that could definitely do it. I think San Antonio would really benefit, obviously, with Wemby. He's a can do it all. So it's like, he's not necessarily a traditional big, but I just don't think that's a real thing anymore. Like, traditional positions, I don't think it's real. And, like, just the way our game is progressing, for you to get to the NBA as a big or any position, you have to be able to do so many different things. You can't just be able to do one thing. Like, when you're like a one-dimensional guy, it's just hard to stick in our league these days. So I feel like you have to be able to guard multiple positions. You have to be able to shoot. You have to be able to drive. You have to be able to, like, do so many different things. Like, our game could definitely get there, and I think it will, because, like, you're seeing with OKC, Chet is technically 4, I guess, in our game today, but he can guard multiple positions. He can shoot the three. He can play off the bounce. I think of that the same way with Cleveland, right? Evan Mobley in our game today is a 4. Maybe he's a 5, whatever, but he can do everything. He can guard every position. He can shoot. He can dribble. He has post up. Got a midi. Like, he can do everything. So that's just where our game is going. I don't believe in traditional positions anymore. So I feel like it definitely could happen.
I mean, never mind the fact, like, you have guards and wings screening, like, inverted pick and rolls, because you have bigger guys that can handle and run points and all that. It's like, positions, like, they don't matter. Like, what is Amen Thompson and an Oscar Thompson? Like, exactly. They're positionless.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's just our game. Like, there's no such thing as, like, a traditional big really anymore, right? Like, Jokic is not a tradition. They play through, right? Like, Giannis could play 1 through 5, really. You know what I mean? Like, that's just how our game is going. Like you said, like, we played San Antonio in the preseason last night, and I'm watching Devin Vassell set biggie screens for Victor Wembanyama. Like, it's hard to read, because if you show, Wemby can pass too. So if you show too hard and Wemby kind of just over, now it's a long closeout to Vassell. That's a very tough closeout to make. So I feel like that's just where our game is going. It's just so positionless. And that's a trend that's happened over the last, you know, decade plus, and it'll continue going. 20 years from now, when I'm out the league, I'm sure we're going to have, it's going to be ridiculous. You know, it's just how the game works.
I mean, I, with all that said, you are one of the game's best point guards. Like, if you are going to put a label on, you are one of the game's best point guards. And so I think with one of the other trends I wanted to talk to you about is the declining usage in pick and roll, because last season you ran only 28 pick and rolls per game, down from 35 the year prior, 39 the year before that, and that follows a league-wide trend. Pick and rolls were at a low in the tracking data era last season league-wide. And so from your vantage point as one of the NBA's best point guards, why do you think the usage of pick and roll was so down last season?
Well, I think there's multiple different things. I think that the switch rate in our league is, I don't have numbers again, but there's just more teams that can switch. You know, like they have the ability to switch. And I feel like the NBA is obviously a league of, if there's a weaker defender out there, let's try to put him in the action, bring up, and some teams can get really repetitive. Okay, we're going to bring up the worst defender, ball screen, switch, and we're going to ISO. You know, it's just like what a lot of teams do. I think that what me and Coach Carlisle talked about a lot was if every team's going to switch, like, let's try to find different ways to put them in bonds, right? Like, the whole point of running a pick and roll is to create a mismatch or a, you know, confusion, right? You're just trying to create confusion. I feel like what me and Coach Carlisle and our team talked about a lot last year was, let's try to pitch a little bit more. Let's try to play off the hit, chase and get, and see how teams guard it, because that's a really hard action to guard as well. So I just feel like pick and roll is kind of, it's not dying, because it's never going to die. But I feel like everything in pick and roll is happening in front of you. Even if you're a bad defender, you can, if you're scaring your guy and you switch and now you're in front, like you are guarding ISO and they're shooting, even if it's Steph or whoever, you know, shooting a step back three against a contest, you kind of have to just be like, it's a tough shot. You know, like off the dribble three is not an easy shot. So I think you kind of have to, like, almost for a defense, it's like, is he going to make enough to beat us with that shot? You know, so I feel like we just try to, as a group, try to switch it up a little bit more, try to play a little bit more through our pitching and our playing off the ball a little bit more. So I feel like that's where our game is progressing as well, because everybody just switches now. I think back to, like, I'm playing Cleveland, right, a team who they have two bigs, yes, and you would think, all right, we're going to just try to put the big in pick and roll all game. It just doesn't happen because Jared Allen can switch, Evan Mobley can switch. Like, it just doesn't really work to your benefit versus, like Milwaukee, with when they had Brook at the five, right? We're putting them in the action because they guard a little bit more traditional. I feel like I'm really good at playing against a traditional big. Like, I feel like, I far from mastered it, but I feel like I can do that at a really high level. If you're going to drop, if you're going to jump out and put two on the ball, I feel like I can figure that out. Switching is a little difficult because it's like, even if I get the switch and I just shoot step back threes or I just ISO all game, it really benefits the defense because over a course of 48 minutes, can load up, you know, and kind of figure it out. So they kind of moved more. Brook didn't play as much. Bobby played a little bit more at the five, and then they were switching down the line in that series. So I just feel like you just kind of got to mix it up because all defenses are kind of changing at all times.
I mean, I think that makes total sense. It relates, it all ties together with kind of positionalist basketball, improvement skills of bigs and all that. One thing I wanted to ask you about, Tyrese, before you have to go, you know, what are you working on while you recover here? Like, what are the skills that you can improve on during your recovery?
Well, I think obviously get my body right, of course. I just started touching a basketball not too long ago. I was shooting free throws. Now I'm getting to the point where I'm jogging a little bit. I'm starting to jump, more like stationary shooting and like jumping on my shot like normal, but it's just like not a ton of movement, you know? But
you don't jump much anyway.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I said. I'm like, people are like, the trainer's like, how do you feel like when you shoot? I'm like, I think I feel normal because I don't really, it's like I'm jumping a ton when I shoot anyway. But I've been joking with our trainers, like I feel like I'm in a pre-draft mode almost. Like in pre-draft, I felt like that's when I was shooting the ball the best, was in my pre-draft. I feel like I've like started to feel that way. Like I'm really shooting the ball well. But just, I think like form, like being able to finish your wrist consistently, like little things, like seeing what I can. I'm trying to do like more stationary passing and stuff with my left hand and really trying to get better at, you know, making reads out with my left and ball. I can do a little bit of ball handling, which I hate ball handling drills. I know that's weird to say as a point guard, but I've never liked them my whole life. So
why?
I have to learn to, I don't know. I don't have the greatest handle. So like, I just feel like when I was growing up, I would just kind of feel like dumb doing it, especially when I got around like guys with a really good handle. I'm like, not that I'm like insecure about my handle by any means, but like I'm around them and I'm kind of like, I don't like this. Can we just play 5-on-5? Because then I can like, then I look better, you know? So just trying, I think there's many different areas where I can get better. And as time goes on, I can do a little bit more. I feel like I'll be able to add a lot.
And last thing, before we recorded, you said there was something you wanted to mention to me.
Oh, yeah. I have a tweet that I want to read to you. And you deleted it now, so it's
I deleted it. Okay.
deleted it. So you have to tell me why
you deleted it. Okay, if I delete it, that's an admission of fault. I know the screenshot will live forever. So I look forward to knowing what it was that I said.
This is game 5. And you deleted it, but I have a screenshot, of course. Of course, okay. I have a screenshot.
Yes.
Game 5 of last year, we lost to the Knicks. I didn't play very well. This was in New York. We came back, won game 6, won game 7. You tweeted, Tyrese Haliburton dilly-dallies around the perimeter too much on offense. He lacks aggression in the paint. No willingness to take the mid-range. Too much of a cone on defense. Aloof, off ball. An inexplicably bad game 5. He needs to take this offseason to figure out who he wants to be. That is what you tweeted. Now, I will say I did have a really bad game. I remember that.
Too harsh. But
there's a lot of statements in there. He needs to shoot the mid-range more. I think he could be better defensively. It was just like, he's aloof. He doesn't shoot the mid-range. It was very statements were very, like, you were, you know what I mean? I'm just putting it out there.
Sounded like a shock jock radio host is what that sounds like to me. But I'll tell you what, Tyrese, about your mid-range jumper before you get to go. You were like a near 50% guy on pull-up mid-range jumpers.
Sure.
And that is the source of me saying, if the step back three's not there, the pull-up midi is for you. And so
I feel like I've done it more.
Yes, you definitely are. And you got better defensively. You did improve.
Yeah. For sure.
Too harsh, though. I think that's probably why I deleted it. I was like, that's too harsh. Sometimes I get emotional. Like, I there's the fan in me comes out, you know?
I understand that. We all do. I do all the time. I'm the king of, if I see something and then I then talk to that person, I would be doing myself a disservice to not bring it up. Just be like, yo, this is what you said. Do you still feel that way? And if I change your mind, cool. That's part of being an athlete. I'm all game with it.
Well, that was too harsh. I'm also very happy to see you continuing. You already reached, there's nothing I admire more, Tyrese, than somebody who's already a high achiever and they continue getting better. And that's what you've continued to do. And I greatly admire that about you. And I know, I pray that you come back and you are back in the finals again. Another opportunity to win a championship, man. And I wish you all the best, man, and congrats on your success. And I look forward to watching Starting 5. It'll be fun,
yes,
man.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I appreciate it, man. Thank you for having me on.
Appreciate you joining me, Tyrese. Big thank you to Tyrese. Coming up, we got Dan Titus talking about fantasy basketball. All right, now joining me from Yahoo Fantasy Sports, Dan Titus. How you doing, Dan?
Doing great, KOC. How you feeling, man?
I'm doing excellent, man. Season's right around the corner. This is the final weekend for people to draft their fantasy basketball team. So we're going to preview the fantasy basketball season right now. And I want to start off with preseason. Who have been some of your biggest risers so far throughout the NBA preseason?
Yeah, I've been pretty bullish on Shaedon Sharpe for much of the offseason, just for the opportunity that he has. He's eligible for a contract extension, but it's really about the pieces that have moved. With Anthony Simons now in Boston, I think we're all expecting to see this offensive leap for Shaedon Sharpe, and it's already happened in the preseason. I mean, he's just been so super electric, freakish athlete. We already knew that, but I think you're actually getting some underrated playmaking by him, the rebounding. He just looks locked in. He's scoring at all three levels. I watched the game against the Golden State Warriors where he was just torching them from three above the break, taking it to the rim. I think this is the guy that casual fans may not know about just yet, but he's really going to make his mark on the league this year along with Denny Avdija. So I actually come away pretty excited about the Portland Trailblazers, which is something that we haven't said in quite some time.
Oh, I know. I think the Blazers in general as a team are just going to be straight up fun to watch. I mean, I think like Shaedon Sharpe is going to be one of those guys like you like having on your fantasy team. It's just fun to have Shaedon Sharpe on your team. He's always living on highlight reels. He makes exciting plays. He's going to have big high scoring performances. But ultimately, like you said, the Blazers as a whole, they have a lot of guys. So I think maybe, at first glance, you might avoid a team like that because it's like different guys every night. But is there an advantage to that variance when it comes to taking a player from the Blazers, was where some nights it's Denny Avdija, some nights it might be Drew Holiday, some nights it might be Shaedon Sharpe. Is there an advantage to that variance, Dan?
In high score, for sure, because, Shaedon Sharpe, one of the reasons why I've been targeting him a lot in high score is because he has dual eligibility. There's only 22 players in the game that can play that can be exchanged interchangeably between guard and front court. But then also, it's all about your boom potential. And no offense to Drew Holiday, he's not a spring chicken. So I don't expect him to have these big ceiling outcome games, whereas Shaedon Sharpe, he could go for 40 in a given night. So I think he's probably one of the safer ones on the Blazers that I would take. Jeremy Grant doesn't really excite me. It's all about Denny Avdija, Shaedon Sharpe. And then I would maybe throw in a last-minute flyer on Donovan Clingan, because I think he's another guy that is starting to come on a little bit more in the preseason. I think he had 6 offensive rebounds in their last preseason game. Just a bully down on the block. Like, there could be points where he gets played off the court, but I think he's going to make a huge impact for this team. And then you have Young Hansen waiting in the wings that, you know, they don't need Robert Williams III right now, and they don't need Duop Reith. Like, these guys are going to run their young guys along with Drew Holiday, and they're going to be a fun team to watch.
I mean, Clingan hit a 3-pointer in his most recent preseason game. Young Hansen has hit 3 of them so far in preseason. Like, these bigs seem to be continuing to extend their range for the Blazers, which, you know, from a straight out basketball standpoint, it really changes the equation with what that front court could look like with Twin Towers, with Clingan and Hansen in the years to come. So I'm very excited there. And from a fantasy standpoint, a lot of interesting guys as well. Do you have any other risers that have stood out to you so far in preseason?
Benedict Mathurin. I think that this is the time where we're going to see him really take that next leap, mainly because he's getting the opportunity to. He's been a guy that's been on the bench primarily, been serviceable in times when he's joined the starting lineup, but with Tyrese Haliburton not there anymore, it's going to be him and Andrew Nembhard really stepping up to soak up some of that usage and opportunity from a shooting volume standpoint. And I just came away really impressed this preseason, just the way that he's taking over control of the offense. Like, I think he could push Pascal Siakam for leading this team in scoring. He's averaging over 18 points in 17 minutes in the preseason so far. He had that explosive 33-point game. If you're looking in high school, you're looking for those high-ceiling outcomes. Once again, I think Benedict Mathurin's a guy that can get you 30 on a random Tuesday and can help you win weeks. So I'm just very bullish on him in general this year, just because he's going to be playing upwards of 30 minutes. And when he's been averaging, you know, 20 points, 6 rebounds, 2 assists whenever he's gotten the opportunity to play more than 30 plus minutes. So I think he's going to have a really strong season this year, and it's probably going to push for some from seasonal awards.
So far in Yahoo Fantasy Basketball drafts, Andrew Nembhard's ADP is at 74 and Mathurin's is at 93. Would you prefer the value of Mathurin a couple rounds lower at 93 over taking Nembhard at 74? Or are you happy with, like, both of those guys as shots in that draft range this year?
That's a great question. I think I've drafted more of Nembhard just because of the positional scarcity. So the further you get in the draft, the harder it is to get assists. So mid-range, you could get a 6-assist guy like Nembhard, you know, for a pretty affordable price. Whereas Benedict Mathurin, you could also argue it's hard to find a 20-point scorer once you get close to those hundreds in draft boards. So I'd be happy to have both. But if I'm talking about pure value, I think I would take the upside of Benedict Mathurin over Andrew Nembhard this season.
And you mentioned high score a few times in our conversation so far, and I'm sure there are some people listening that, you know, they're used to regular fantasy basketball. Can you explain to me what high score is, and to explain to the listeners?
Yeah, not a problem. So high score is the latest fantasy game. It's a new innovative way to play fantasy basketball. Simple rosters, simple scoring. Some of the differences that you'll see from a traditional or standard points league is that turnovers no longer count, so you don't have to worry about those, you know, Cade Cunninghams and Trey Youngs that have a high assist rate, but also have a pretty high turnover rate. But then also it elevates the scoring for, or the points accumulated for assists. Assists are worth 2 points. Rebounds are actually discounted to 1. So that makes guards a little bit more valuable. But I think when we participate in our first draft with the NBA Creator League, it was really interesting because it seemed like front court players were going more quickly and more readily than the guards. So I think that that's an interesting trend, whereas, like, I think that there's a positional advantage to having guards, but the front court players are actually the ones that have, you know, you'll see these 60, 70 point type performances in the Wembys, the Jokic's, Giannis. So it's a very interesting strategic decision-making process of how you want to build your roster. And when I said it is simpler, it's you start with only 6 players and your whole roster is 10 teams. So you're going to be having a pretty vast waiver pool, which I think makes it also a little bit more fun because you're not having to dig in the trenches for, you know, these ninth, 10th, 11th, 12th man guys on your bench that you don't really know who they are. So I think it's a way that fantasy players, if you're looking for something more simple, not having to set your lineup every day, worry about load management. High score is a great way to get in the door and play fantasy basketball.
And not having to set your lineup for people who don't, you know, want to deal with it every single day. Set it and forget it. It's like you set it once a week.
So you can set it once a week, or you can actually exchange players throughout the week. You get the highest score for, you get the highest single game performance. You get your score for your highest single game performance. So that means you're not worried about, hey, did this guy play three or four games? You're not playing this volume game of just trying to outmatch people with points. You're only going to get one score for your player each week. So that's why you really want to focus on those boom or bust players that can accumulate the best outcome in one game each week. So it's a pretty interesting wrinkle to fantasy basketball. So I think you should try to go play it. We're going to have a really fun league covering throughout the season that we're participating in partnership with the NBA. So happy to come in, give you guys some tips on how to manage your rosters.
Draft day fades. Who are you fading in your drafts right now, Dan?
First one is J-Dub, Jalen Williams. I don't think he's ready to play basketball right now. And right now where he's going in drafts, it's a little bit too high. He's going late second round, even mid second round in terms of ADP. And so right now I would probably be okay with drafting him about a round or two later, because in fantasy basketball, you want to get out to a head start. The last thing you want to do is draft injured players and then have to stash them on IL and then have to find replacement level guys to get started for the season. So I think you're just at a better advantage if you draft a player that's actually healthy now. No matter, like, Jalen Williams is a very good fantasy player. You know, he's going to average 25-5 with a steal and a half a game, shoot good percentages. But I think you could get a better value player that's going to help you in the beginning part of the season to get you off on a good start.
Yeah, I was talking to Bobby Marks earlier in the podcast, and, you know, in reference to Oklahoma City, one of the reasons why he's like, you know, this team, we'll see, you know, how they bounce back, is J-Dub is going to miss the start of the season. He's obviously a critical piece to that roster. And I think with OKC, you know, on the court, like, they'll be fine. Like, they have so much depth. But to your point about his ADP, it is a little strange that he'd be going that high so far right now in fantasy basketball drafts. Who's one of your guys that you feel like people aren't necessarily talking about enough, but you're trying to target these players in a lot of your drafts right now this month?
I think my guy is mainly Tari Eason, and it's because he is so impactful on both sides of the ball. And one of the statistics that I've been using more readily in because we've been going more points-based focused is fantasy points per minute. And that's a statistic that's used primarily in DFS, daily fantasy sports, whenever you're trying to maximize the value for a player for a dollar amount. And I think the same could be applied for season-long fantasy because especially in something like high score, you're trying to chase those upside performances. And when you look at a per game usage perspective, Tari Eason was ranked 92nd percentile over the last 2 years in fantasy points per minute. So whenever he's on the court, he produces. Dorian Finney-Smith's already dealing with a knee injury. Kevin Durant is old. There's a very good chance that this guy is going to play starter level minutes. And when he does, he's going to put up those starter level numbers. So he's a guy that I think you could get for very cheap in fantasy leagues. I think I got him last night, you know, well beyond pick 110. And I think he's going to be upwards of a top 75 player across formats this year because he can score offensively. He's a good rebounder. He gets you the stocks along with Amen Thompson. He is just the perfect bench wing to have that Ime Udoka could deploy. And I think it was kind of disrespectful that he was left off the top 100 list. He's not a household name, but I think he very well could become one as well this year.
Yeah, man, Tari Eason's awesome. I mean, just such a fun player to watch. Him and Amen Thompson, those two last season coming off the bench, wreaking havoc against opposing offenses. Just the energy and intensity. They talk about fun players. Tari Eason's definitely in the top 100 for fun players and definitely has a chance to be top 100 for fantasy basketball purposes as well. And the graphic we showed on screen with some of the sleepers, Ace Bailey was listed on there as well. And with Ace Bailey, I'm sure throughout this entire month of preseason, as you're seeing him just get fed the ball and fed opportunities both on ball and off ball, the way in which the Utah Jazz are using him in a diverse assortment of plays in the half court, that signals to me that they are going to feature this guy a lot this season and the way in which Ace Bailey is performing with those actions. He's not just being, you know, chucker like he was, you know, more in high school and college, which I don't mean that as a knock. It's he was part of the reason why there's appeal in him, why he was a top pick, why he was a lottery pick. But he's passing a little bit too. And so for fantasy basketball purposes, if you're getting points every night from Ace Bailey, efficient or not, but you're also getting him in with passing opportunities, assist opportunities, especially in high score where turnovers don't matter, as you said earlier, Ace Bailey could end up a steal at ADP of 135. That feels like it could potentially be low for him. And he's a big rebounder too. He rebounds a lot.
Dude, I think I haven't come around on a player so quickly. I'm trying to remember the last time I did, but you know, I was questioning the fit with Utah. And mainly it's because of, you know, that
so
whole
was he. Manager. To be fair, yeah. Dan, he was also questioning the fit and he fired his agent. He said, see ya.
But literally, Danny, I think that was probably Danny Ainge being like, bro, I got you. Let's get rid of the noise and let's lock in. And since he has, man, listening to the Will Hardy press conference after their last game, I think a reporter asked, you know, how is Ace coming along and how much you've been throwing at him? And he said it was very similar to the way Lauri Markkanen came in. He's kind of just, we threw stuff at him. He learned, he got it quickly, and he adapted. So I just think his basketball IQ was being underrated because he was being labeled as a chucker. But what we've seen in the preseason, I think he easily could have been one of those preseason risers too, man, because I was, in addition to the playmaking, not worried about the score, and his mid-range is locked in already. But his defense was underrated. His rebounding is underrated. I think he's going to probably push for a top 100 player, and definitely in points leagues. Categories, we'll see how his efficiency lies, but in points leagues, this guy's going to be a bucket, and I think he's going to start right away. He has a path to 30 minutes, and by all accounts, this Utah Jazz staff really wants to get him involved from day one. So I'm really bullish on Ace Bailey, and he's going, you know, well beyond the top 120 picks. But I think I could see his draft stock rising as we approach draft weekend.
Isn't it funny how sometimes in life the thing you want the least ends up being the best thing for you, and vice versa? Sometimes the thing you want the most ends up being the thing that's worse for you in life. You learn that as you get older. And with Ace Bailey, he's, you know, just a kid, and on draft night he wants to go to Washington, and Utah drafts you, and it's like, God, I did not want to be here. This is the last place I wanted to be. But it could prove to be the best possible landing spot for him in his career. It could. And like, so far, I'm just beyond impressed by how he looks and how his role looks, the investment in him. Like, this could be for the best, Dan. It really could be for him.
I'm sure he thought he was getting sent to the wall at that point. Like, yeah, because if you had a choice between Washington, D.C. and Utah, you're like, bro, send me to D.C. all day. But as much as I love what D.C. is doing in terms of their rebuild, cast him away to a place where he could just focus on basketball. Couldn't have been a better landing spot. It's like that Wemby going to San Antonio. It's like, just go to the place that can cultivate you and build you up to be the best possible basketball player. That was a godsend for the basketball, from the basketball gods there. Yeah.
I'll tell you what, Dan, I've been to Utah once. Oh, no, twice. I was there once for 24 hours when they had All-Star weekend. I wasn't there long. And then I went there last year. I forget why. I couldn't be there long. I forget exactly the reason why. But last year, before my move from LA back to the East Coast, during my farewell West Coast little adventures, my mom and I went to, we saw the Redwoods, you know, in Northern California. Oh, yeah. We also went to Zion National Park before we moved back.
Beautiful.
Utah is not the wall. It is one of the most gorgeous places I have ever been in my whole life. It is stunning. It is so beautiful. And the air is just, you take a deep breath, the air is so crisp. It's the opposite of what you get every morning in the Bay in San Francisco.
Right. I'm not taking like those deep breaths.
Yeah. It's definitely the total opposite of Los Angeles, but it is. I'll tell you what, you know, Utah was never a place where I was like, oh yeah, like go visit Utah. But I want to go back to Utah and see more of Utah. It's so beautiful.
Yeah, I went out to Park City last year, and I'm not even a skier, but you know, it was a nice city, nice getaway, nice vacation, and probably want to spend a little bit more time in Salt Lake, man. I just at least want to see a basketball game while I'm out there. Yeah. But not a place I want to live, but to visit, yeah, I could dig it.
Yeah, Yeah, it's absolutely gorgeous. I mean, the mountains are just so big, so beautiful. Can't wait to go back sometime. Dan, appreciate you joining me today, man. We are in our Creator League, Yahoo Fantasy High Score. I had an auto draft. I was in New Hampshire that weekend, and you know, I poked my head in very quickly, but I trusted the rankings. I trusted you, Dan. I trusted you.
It worked out pretty well for you, man. It worked out all right for you. Like, I think you took some risks. You got some old guys on there, but Kawhi Leonard, LeBron James. But in high score, I think it works to your benefit to get those. Yeah. I mean, we're talking about, you know, NBA All-Star here, all NBA players. As long as they can, you can count on them for one game a week, you should be all right.
I mean, look, I just feel like I'm being cursed. In fantasy football this year, I got the 12th pick, the last pick in a keeper league, mind you, as well. And I got screwed. I've drafted pretty well, considering. And this year in the high score league, I had the last pick as well. It's just not cool. It's not cool. I wanted Wemby. I already made a trade offer for Wemby in the league. I'm not sure the owner is. Just a virtual slap across the face. Like, it's like, who do you think I'm an idiot? They probably thought when their offer came across, you think I'm gonna trade you Wemby for Bam Adebayo and I don't know who else I offered? No, I knew they would say no, but
you gotta shoot your shot. Exactly, you gotta shoot your shot, you gotta test the waters, and that's just the start of the conversation. Maybe it's a slap in the face back to you of like, hell no, but you know, at least you know where you stand.
Yeah, you win some, you lose some. That one, you know, I know it's not expecting much. Dan, I appreciate you joining me today, man. I look forward to having you on throughout the season as well. Talk basketball, talk fantasy. Always good to have you on, Dan. Appreciate it.
Great talking to you, KSC.
Big, big thank you to Dan, Tyrese, and Bobby for joining me on today's episode. Thank you to Emmy and Dakota for producing us. Thanks to you for giving us a listen. We'll be back again next week with a final season preview show on Monday. Looking forward to that one. Thanks to Father John Misty for the music. Have a good rest of your day. Talk to you soon.